We're passing out of the age of Pisces now to the age of Aquarius. Now, this age of Aquarius that we're entering is different than the sun being in Aquarius in past ages. In that, does anyone know the time period that we're in a particular sign?
You mean the length of it?
Yeah.
2,000
years. About 2,100
years.
2,165.3 years.
Yeah, so I think it's about 2,160, you're right. 2,160 years. So what we're doing, we're passing into the age of Aquarius, and I believe the age of Aquarius that we passed over began in 1945 when they exploded the first atomic bomb. Because it says in the scriptures, the sign of the coming of the Son of Man will be when the heavens are shaken with power and great glory. The word heaven comes from the Greek word Uranos, and the word uranium comes from Uranos. When uranium is shaken, and you shall see the sign of the Son of Man in uranium, revealed with power and great glory. Interesting, isn't it? How is the sign of the Son of Man revealed in uranium? It's revealed in uranium because how does the atomic bomb work? It works because the atom is split in two, and some of the pure spiritual essence, or pure energy, as Einstein calls it, is released. The atom is the tomb that holds the pure spiritual energy. After Jesus was crucified, they put him in a tomb. And the tomb split open, and the pure spiritual eternal life was released. That corresponds to the atom being split open and the pure spiritual energy was released. The sign of the Son of Man appearing in uranium is a splitting of the atom. And that's the beginning of the age of Aquarius. Now, to transfer over from one age to another takes about 200-300 years. The beginning of Aquarius was a couple hundred years, began to show a couple hundred years before that, and to fully settle into it will be a couple hundred years from now. But the transition point was the atomic bomb going off, because that was the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, Uranus, uranium. Interesting, is it not? So, what we can expect, matter of fact, it's interesting, on our dollar bill it says the new order of the ages. In other words, our founding fathers recognized that they were creating the new order of the ages. They were Aquarian thinkers that were looking ahead to the Aquarian age, because they were some of the first people to feel that Aquarian energy. And the Aquarian energy is the big thing in there, is the freedom of the spirit, service for humanity. And they sensed that. And that's why the founding fathers had to break off from the old ways and try to create new ways of doing things. And now we reach a crescendo between the war of good and evil, which is the true Armageddon, was the war of the Allies versus the Axis powers and Hitler. And that was the true Armageddon of our age. And that was a transition point. It was right when the atomic bomb was created, that ensured, give us 100% assurance, that the Allies would defeat Hitler. And that was a sign of the coming of the Son of Man. And now we enter into the age of Aquarius. We're actually in it, but we're so close to the cusp, we have a whole bunch of these hanging on Piscean energies that just aren't letting go. And they're still the ones in the sacrifice. Now, we'll take the good from sacrifice and keep it. But the bad in sacrifice is where we just sacrifice and we don't get anything back. We just sacrifice to some authority. The authority takes our sacrifice, builds stone buildings with it, and we don't see any good out of it ourselves. But the true essence of sacrifice, that which is good from the Piscean Age, we take with us and drop that which hasn't worked. And in the Aquarian Age is the keynote, will be service, organization, humanity, brotherly love, and so this will take a while to completely go into. And in the next 100, 200 years, we'll see a lot of what is hanging on from the past 2,000 years drop and will not reappear. But now the Aquarian energies are getting very powerful. And one of the signs of them is, see, Aquarius is an air sign, and we look in the air and we see planes flying all over. And the fact that we are doing so many things in the air is a sign that Aquarius is here.
Communication to the air.
Yeah, communication, satellites, internet. This is all related to the age of Aquarius. But we haven't seen anything yet. Wait for a couple hundred more years if we don't destroy ourselves first. You know, we always have our free will, and we could always create a major war that could set us back to the Stone Age. And that's always a possibility. But the best guesses of the ones who know are that the chances are humanity, even though we may have some difficult times, will move into the age of Aquarius and eventually establish peace on earth, goodwill to men. And that's the goal. It will finally happen. Okay? Any questions or comments before we close?
In our lifetime?
We're not under the current administration.
Well, the crisis is during our lifetime. Between now and the next 25, 30 years will be a crucial time period. And if we can get through time period without having a major conflagration, the chances are that Aquarius will naturally settle into the age of Aquarius.
If we all do our part, each one of us does our part of becoming aware within ourselves, then we're, as a whole consciousness, we can move forward.
Right, and that's the plan, and chances are it's going to happen like this. We're going to have some hairy experiences over the next generation, but we're going to work them out, and eventually peace on earth will be established. Won't be perfect peace, but it'll be, the nations right now are like the states were 150 years ago or so. In the early days of our country, we had one state always worrying about fighting the other states. You know, Pennsylvania was mad at New Jersey, and they're about ready to go to war at the drop of a hat, just like Israel and Palestine is now. So the nations of the world are like the states were a couple hundred years ago. Now, what happened to the states? The states merged and joined to the extent is that Oregon doesn't enter their consciousness to go to war with Idaho, does it? They don't even think, it's not something we even worry about. Now, 200 years from now, if we don't blow ourselves up in between, the various countries will not think of going to war with each other. Now, we've just about reached that point with Russia. We're a lot more peaceable. We don't worry about it like we used to. And another 50 years from now, never enter our head to go to war with Russia as if things progress as they're supposed to. And 200 years from now, the nations will be like states. They'll cooperate together. Won't even enter their head to go to war with each other. Maybe have a few terrorists there still to deal with. But as far as the nations go, eventually they will be evolved just like the United States is like a miniature example of the whole world. 50 states. In the beginning, those 13 states were very warlike with each other. They even had different races populating the different states. A bunch of Germans were in one and a bunch of English were in another, and they hated each other. And that's why creating the Constitution, where all the states joined together, was a pretty miraculous thing. And that's why it was so difficult. When those guys got together hammering out the Constitution, they were arguing in each other's backs like you wouldn't believe. I mean, a lot of people look at these guys and they think they were just peaceably put together that document. I mean, remember the story of Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton insulted Aaron Burr, so they went out and had a duel, and Alexander Hamilton was shot. I mean, they had their words together in those days, and it wasn't that easy. And even today, if, for instance, Israel and the various Middle East countries progress, Perhaps one day we will reach a point to where it'll be like Oregon and Idaho. They just coexist, and they'll look back on their past and they'll think, what was the matter with those guys 200 years ago? Why did they, we can't understand why they were at each other's back so much, you know? And, but that's something that you don't hear much about the early states, how they were at each other's backs and how they were, there was always the possibility of them warring. Of course, eventually we did have a war between the states. It got so fierce. But before that, there was the danger of individual states going at war with each other. And, but now it's not even in our consciousness. And this is the goal of the Aquarian Age, to have this happen for the whole world. And then the whole world can cooperate together and make a better place for everybody to live. I'll say just one more thing, is that there's a lot of things that are unpredictable. A lot of people think everything is outlined for a future. It's not. The future is malleable.
We're writing it ourselves right now.
Right. And we're creating the future. And things can be thrown, a monkey wrench can be thrown in things that can change a lot of different things. But there are certain cycles, and certain cycles come like the age of Aquarius. There are certain energies here, and it's pretty predictable that certain things will happen. You know, and we see a lot of signs of it, like I say, the power of airplanes and internet and all these things. These were things that were pretty much destined to happen. But there's certain, a lot of things that are predicated on our free will, including whether or not we enter peaceably into Aquarius or into Aquarius in bad shape. So the chances are we're going to go there in one piece, hopefully. We could move in fairly peacefully into the next age. Right now we're on the cusp between the, even though I believe the transition period happened in 1945, the total transition period is a period of a couple hundred years. Takes a couple hundred years to really move in, because we've got to let go of the old Piscean energies. The Piscean energies are still strong and holding on. All of the fundamentalist churches are controlled by the Piscean energies. A lot of the political ways of thinking is, anything connected with anti-technology is Piscean energy, because Aquarian governs technology, because Aquarius is an air sign, which governs mind, thought, space, this type of thing. Air flight, space flight, and technology is governed by Aquarius. So we're going to see tremendous technology develop. And it's interesting who's anti-technology. It's not only fundamentalist Christians, but a lot of fundamentalist New Agers are also anti-technology. So technology, on the other hand, like I was saying, it can be dangerous. But it's something that we got to deal with. We have to face these things and move into the future with enough peace and goodwill to be able to develop technology, yet not kill ourselves with it. What's that? Yeah, let's hope not. If we had a full-fledged atomic war, we could wind up going back to the old Aquarian Age thousands of years ago, rather than the new Aquarian Age.
By Piscean energies?
Yeah, some of the environmentalists are, because a lot of them want to live like the Amish, and this type of desire is more Piscean than Aquarian. Now, the interesting thing about Aquarius is we're not only entering into the Aquarian Age, which is approximately a 2300-year cycle, we're not only moving one out of 12, but there's a greater zodiac, and there's 12 greater signs, and in each one of these greater signs there are 12 sub signs, and the greater sign is in the hundreds of thousands of years. Now the Aquarian Age we're moving in two Aquarian Ages at one time. The lesser Aquarian Age, which is 2300 year cycle. But then we're moving into also a greater cycle of Aquarius. So we're moving into a double Aquarius, and this happens very rarely, which means that we're going to go into an area that's going to be very, not only influenced by Aquarius, but doubly influenced by Aquarius. And that's going to make this age a tremendous age of change. And because Aquarius is an air sign, it's going to be the plane of the mind is going to be very highly developed and emphasized. In the age of a Pisces, which is governed by water, emotion and feeling was very much emphasized. All the Crusades were fought because of that passion that they had, and they fought for the blood of Jesus because of their passion, and they fought for their beliefs because of their passion. But now we're going to move in to hopefully a more peaceful time period that is governed by a higher mind. That doesn't mean the lower emotions will be dropped, but we will take the good emotional energies and take them with us, take the best out of what we've learned from Pisces, take it with us, and develop the higher mind to the greatest extent possible. It's interesting that this earth is covered by 3/4 of water, and we are such powerfully emotional beings on this planet. But the lesson of Aquarius will be to learn to walk on water, so to speak. It's almost a symbolism of Christ walking on water was the mastery of the emotions. To not let the emotions control you, but you control them by learning to master them. The keynote of the Piscean Age was sacrifice. The keynote of the new age is something different. That doesn't mean we leave behind sacrifice. It means we take the best of the old age and incorporate it in the new. Now, the negative part of sacrifice is we see it in the religions today. People give lots of money to their minister, and the minister uses it to build stone buildings that really don't do a lot for anybody. Or Jimmy Baker misused all the money he got, you know, and that type of thing. So people are sacrificing. The negative aspect of sacrificing, people are blindly sacrificing. The money is misused. Okay? But true sacrifice is where you are willing to give in a way that what you give will be used fruitfully. That's the true lesson of sacrifice. And that's what we're supposed to have picked up over the past 2,000 years, how to do that. And then we move it in the age of Aquarius, and the keynote word of the age of Aquarius is service. So we must take the idea of sacrifice and incorporate it with service. And the keynote of this age is when we sacrifice, we use that sacrifice to serve and create a cause and effect so everything comes back to us. And Jesus talked about this. He says, I have come that they might have abundance. Okay, so he came so that we could have the abundant life, he said. And that abundant life he was talking about wasn't during the Piscean Age, but he was looking forward into the Aquarian Age. The Aquarian Age is the age of abundant life, where we will serve and be recompensed for our service. And business is evolving into this. Just a few centuries ago, business was very selfish, and you know, they had slave labor and labor of young children, and the conditions were so bad, people only lived to be about age of 30, and they died terrible deaths. And now, business is the service is reciprocal. People are getting stock options, they're participating. Many businesses are employee-owned, with employees having a voice, and the employees are getting a greater voice. So in the Aquarian age, business will turn, despite the fact that it's condemned by so many people, it's evolving and will evolve into a great service for humanity, where people will serve and then get a recompense for their service. And it will be a very exacting recompense. Unlike in the Piscean Age, you gave everything and didn't get anything back except maybe in heaven somewhere, you know. Jesus sent his apostles out. They all got killed and drugged through the streets, and they didn't seem to get any reward at all. But he said in the kingdom of heaven, speaking of the future Aquarian Age, you will get your reward. And all these guys will come back, and they'll have a fairly fruitful time in the age of Aquarius. The people that was around Jesus when he was here will receive their recompense in the Aquarian age, many of them. Yeah. But they didn't get much in that age. You know, they got all of them killed, and they didn't get a lot. They didn't get a lot of personal benefit out of anything. They served and they sacrificed, and many of them appropriately so. But sacrifice is really a payment. You know, you're paying for something that's important for you. And Christ taught them about the kingdom of heaven, and they made a sacrifice as a payment for the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven is not only in the next world, but it's to materialize in this world. And the kingdom of heaven, which is within, of course, will be within many people. And if it's within many people, then pretty soon it gets to be also without. So we'll have the kingdom of heaven within. And when you have people that have the kingdom of heaven within gathered together, you have the kingdom of heaven also without. So we're moving from the age of sacrifice into the age of service, which is governed by the air sign Aquarius. How's that going to work? What are the signs that service is beginning to dominate? Is it beginning to dominate, or is it beginning, maybe not dominate, but say surface? How is there service in the world today that there wasn't here 200 years ago? Right, there's a lot of humanitarian efforts going on. Like, say, everywhere from the Red Cross to a lot of churches are doing humanitarian things. If there's a tornado somewhere or a hurricane, all kinds of donations come in. Did that happen 200 years ago? No, if a hurricane hit some area, well, they were pretty much on their own. And maybe neighbors helped neighbors a little bit, and that was about it. But now, people have a humanitarian sense that they didn't have before. And this is through the energy of that governs mind and service that is manifesting in this age. Business is going to be one of the key ingredients to bring in the Aquarian age, because it's governed not only by Aquarius, but by Ray 7, which governs physical order of things. And business functions through organization. And organizations are governed through the seventh ray to a great extent. Now, let's look into the future. We're told, this is one of the teachings of DK, is that he warned almost about 80 years ago or so, that one of the dangers that we will face to prevent us entering the Aquarian age would be a religious war. And when he said that, I thought, religious war? What's the chances of where would a religious war come from? At that time, you know, the Islamic extremists were just unheard of. They were completely contained. What we had to worry about was the Soviet Union and communism, and before that, Hitler, but there was no sign of a religious war. But now, as we're entering the cusp, entering into the age of Aquarius, we see the strong possibility of some type of religious war developing. And he warned that this was one of the dangers that we would face. And that prediction seems to be right on the mark. And we also have the danger of blowing ourselves up using atomic energy, starting World War III, atomic bombs. Now, let's assume we're going to get through this. And the chances are in our favor that we're going to be able to get through this. We'll have some hiccups. We may have a couple atomic bombs go off. We may have a lot of religious problems to deal with, extremist problems. But the chances are we're going to be able to get through them and move fully into the Aquarian age. Once we move fully into the Aquarian age, we're going to have at least 1,000 years of peace and stability, where we can concentrate on improving our situation and increasing the brotherhood of man, sisterhood of woman, making friends with each country.
Can we enter into the Aquarian Age without a point of tension and a release of energy, such as what took place in World War II?
Yeah, that's possible. Just like we did have a point of tension, I guess, was the Revolutionary War created a point of tension that drove us together. So there's usually some point of tension, but it depends. If there's a point of tension, it will happen faster, one way or another. If there's always some tension, just like the Soviet Union fell apart without any World War III. And that was a great, tremendous accomplishment that was able to happen, and our enemy was defused without having to go through a great tribulation. And that could happen again. Hopefully it will happen with China, that the relations will just get a little better and better and will become interdependent enough that it's just not productive to go to war. One of the things that keeps us from going into World War III right now is nuclear weapons. All the major nations are terrified about a nuclear war because they realize if we have a nuclear war, the people that start it might wind up dead. Now, the problem with the Muslim nations is they don't care. They're willing to have a nuclear war. They're willing to sacrifice their lives. They're willing to get their, how many virgins, 80 virgins or whatever? 70 virgins. And so a lot of them don't care. They figure it's a glory to die for Allah.
All of those virgins are actually nuns with shotguns.
Yeah. Yeah, they may be in for a shock when they get to the next world. The Piscean Age is the most emotional sign in the zodiac. It's a water sign. It's a sign on the mutable cross, which is also related to the emotional nature. And so it's a very emotional sign. And the sign of Pisces has something else that's interesting about it in astrology. That is, it's the sign where we learn everything that doesn't work. And when we learn everything that doesn't work, then we have to let it go. It's a sign of sacrifice. This is why the sacrifice on the cross is the message of Pisces, because we have to learn to sacrifice everything that doesn't work and let it go. And during the past 2,000 years, we've had lots of demonstrations of what works and what doesn't work. And now we have to sift through the rubble of the past 2,000 years, find everything that didn't work, because everything that didn't work during the Piscean Age is a remnant of all the 11 ages before it. And all the remnants of all the past 12 ages are here before us in the past 2,000 years. We have to let go of that which doesn't work, salvage and take that which does work, and move it into the new age. And the new age is ruled by air, the mind. It will be an age of reason, an age of thought, an age where the keynote word instead of sacrifice will be service. Will be that you serve and you get recompense or reward for that your service rendered. In the Piscean Age, we sacrificed and there was no reward. We had to wait till some spiritual heaven before anybody got any reward. But it's going to be a little different in this age. In this age, we serve, and the reward is not only with Christ, but the reward is with us, because we will achieve abundance and the desires of our hearts much quickly, more quickly in this age than any other age. Now, there's another very interesting thing about the coming Aquarian Age, which I believe the center of focus, the time that we shifted from the Piscean Age to the Aquarian Age, was the moment that the first atomic bomb went off. That is the sign of the coming of the Son of Man that's prophesied in the Matthew 24. But it's going, even though the Aquarian Age has already started, it takes about 200 years to fully enter into an age. And it's interesting that around 0 BC, when Christ was supposed to have been born, was about 200 years into the Piscean Age. People think that the birth of Christ signaled the beginning of the Piscine Age, but it was already close to 200 years into the Piscine Age. The ages last about 2,200 years. I believe it's 2160 or something like that, or close to that. So the ages aren't like the astrological ages are not exactly 2,000 years, but somewhat over. Now, every group of 12 signs of the zodiac that we pass through are part of a greater sign. And what is unique about the sign we're entering into? We're entering into the age of Aquarius, and as we're entering into the new age of Aquarius, it's part of a greater age of Aquarius that spans around 25,000 years. So we have Aquarius within Aquarius, making it the strongest Aquarian cycle for since the days of Atlantis. So this is quite interesting, and this makes the Aquarian age we're entering into one of the most, probably the most potent Aquarian age we've ever entered into, because we're more advanced than we were the last time this happened, which is many, it would have been 12 times 25 is about 300,000 years ago before this happened. You know, so it's been about 300,000 years since we've had this unique astrological Aquarian combination. So this makes the Aquarian age tremendous potency, and it gives us the possibility to revitalize the Earth on Aquarian principles, which is the mind, service, organization, just law and order around ceremonial magic of the seventh ray, as it's called, which is strong in the Aquarian age. The seventh ray will be very powerful. We'll have a lot of interesting ceremony, unlike ceremony in the churches. There will be ceremonies that actually bring specific results. The time frame for entering the fully entering the Aquarian age is about 200 years. We're going to be gradually shifting over. There's still a lot of Piscean energy. The Piscean energy is in the churches, are still strong. All the regular churches, the Muslim churches, the Christian churches, even a lot of the Buddhists and Hindus are still strongly affixed in the Piscean astral energy. And this has to be shifted over from the emotions to the plane of the mind. Now, when you think of mind, you think, well, are we leaving out heart? Actually, the heart energies has 12 petals. Six of the petals are related to wisdom, which is very closely related to mind, and six of them are related to different types of love energy. And so the love wisdom, the wisdom aspect of the heart is very closely linked to the mind, and in the mind is an exact duplicate of the heart chakra. In the mind, in the top of the head, you have an exact duplicate of the heart center. So you have a heart center in the head, and you have a heart center in the heart. The reason for this is the pure love of Christ is really very mental, but it's associated with a higher mind. When people associate mind with something sterile, they're thinking of the concrete lower mind. But the higher mind is very closely attuned with the heart energy, so much that you can't use the higher mind without using the heart to a degree. They're very closely intertwined. And one of the popular sayings among many of the New Agers is, well, we have to be mindless and let go of the mind. Now, if you let go of the mind, that's what happens when you dream. You let go of the mind when you dream, and nothing makes any sense in your dream, because your mind is somewhere. You, in the vehicle of the mind, or somewhere else, and all that's dreaming is your emotional nature, and your emotional nature without mind is really garbled and nonsensical. But it gives you something to experience while you're dreaming anyway. It's better than nothing. But then when our mind comes back, we can mix it with the emotional self and try to make some sense of what's happening again. Over the next 200 years, the plan is to establish relative peace on earth. And before Christ can do his work, there has to be like an anchor of stability on this planet. He's not going to come where the Jews and Muslims and destroying each other and we're at war with Iraq and this type of thing. He's going to wait till there's an anchor of stability. And if we can establish a little bit of stability in Iraq, where there's an anchor, where a teacher like the Christ could go to the Middle East and go teach among both Christian and Muslims, that would be the ideal thing. If we could do that without somebody trying to cut his head off. If societies over there could be established that were free, because part of his plan will be to work in the Middle East and influence people for good there. And sooner or later, a temple will be built in Jerusalem, and it will be a beautiful temple. And that is the plan. And the Jews will eventually have a Messiah of their own, but it won't be the Christ himself, but another master will come and work with them. And the important thing to realize is that Jesus, or the Christ, is not alone. The Christ is the head of the spiritual hierarchy of the planet. There are a number of masters, the exact number isn't given, but the head of the masters of wisdom is the Christ. And Jesus the disciple is one of them. And Dwalkola is another one, Kuthumi. There's quite a number of them that work with him. They are all working strenuously to bring peace on earth, goodwill to men. It's interesting, in the Mormon scriptures, it gives an interesting hint about the masters. It says, "All are under the condemnation of sin, except for holy men that ye know not of." For those of you familiar with the Mormon scriptures. Well, who are the holy men that you know not of that are not under any condemnation? Those are the masters, the spiritual hierarchy of the planet that work with the Christ. And they will come with the Christ eventually and work during the Aquarian Age. Some of them will incarnate, others will merely manifest in some way, others will work by overshadowing disciples and creating a connecting link and working with them. So will reach the point, as it was in ancient days, it said the gods walked openly among men, and as it is in the approaching age, the gods will again walk openly among us. But to begin with, only a handful of people will recognize who these godly men are, men and women eventually. Now, another interesting thing about the ages is what is good in one time becomes evil in another. When Christ came, he taught about sacrifice and gave the example of the great sacrifice on the cross and told his disciples, look, after I leave, you know, they're going to come after you and seek to kill you, and they're going to be thinking they're going to be doing God a favor by killing you. You're going to have to be willing to put your lives on the line to further the work. And so he asked them to sacrifice everything. And they had to commit everything. I mean, they were fed to the lions, they were drugged through the streets, they were beheaded, they were thrown in jail. They had a pretty tough time. Not only did the apostles, but thousands and thousands of Christians. Nero used them to put wax on them and used them as big candles to light up his front yard with. And he burned them as candles right in his front yard. You know, could you imagine doing that to people? Lighting up your front yard with people so you have light for your front yard. I mean, it's amazing what these guys did when they had power. And so they had to commit tremendous sacrifice. And then as the church began to grow, the sacrifice was often not only with sacrificing their time and sometimes their lives, but money became a really big thing. You got to give us your money. And then at some time, the church told us, if you give us enough money, we'll guarantee you're going to get into heaven. We're going to guarantee you're going to be saved. So the priests got really rich because they would promise the rich people that, you know, if you give us a substantial amount, we'll just give you a blank check for heaven, and you won't have to worry about it. You know, you can go rape your neighbor's wife or whatever, and afterwards, and it doesn't really matter because you got a blank check now. It become pretty tough. So that which was good, where they sacrificed and they really gave an example to the world, then people began to sacrifice their money to a corrupt priesthood. So does this mean that that which was good sacrifice began to be misused and became that which is evil? This is what happens almost in the beginning of every good work. That which is good and desirable sets a great example, then it becomes corrupt and it becomes evil. Sacrificed with Christ and his little group was good. With a handful of Christians that followed, it was also good. And then pretty soon the priest says, hey, we can use this attitude of sacrifice. We can make them give us whatever we ask, and we can get rich off these people, and we can have power because of these people, because they're willing to look on us as a substitute for God. And by looking on us as a substitute for God, we can get them to give us whatever we ask, or they won't get their big foot in heaven. Now, so that which was good became that which was evil. Now, Pisces is also a water sign, as I said, and that makes it very emotional. And also passion, tremendous emotion and passion with that age. Like any of you see the recent movie, The Kingdom of Heaven, about the Crusades, I mean, those people were very passionate. They were willing to give their lives for what they believed in and fight for it. They were very emotional, very passionate, and they were controlled because they were told, look, if you fight and if you die in the Crusades, the Pope will guarantee you'll get to heaven. Well, I guess I'll go fight in the Crusades because that's like millions of years I'm going to be in heaven, so it's going to be worth it. So emotion and passion. Emotion and passion are good things also. If you feel emotional about that which is right, that gives you a lot more power to achieve that which is right. If you feel passionate about that which is right, but if you feel emotional and passionate and are deceived, well then, that's another matter. They just had a thing about Jim Jones and his group that drank the Kool-Aid. Have you ever all heard about them? You know, he was very passionate and emotional about what he was teaching. And so he reached a point, well, you know, to make sure that I can teach them the way I want, I'm going to take them down to Guyana and where the government can't interfere, nobody can interfere, and I'm going to build the kingdom there. Same thing with old David Koresh. And he was very passionate about what he believed. On the other hand, let's look at somebody else. Abraham Lincoln was very passionate about what he believed, that a nation cannot exist half slave and half free. He was very passionate about that belief. He was very passionate about saving the Union. So if you're passionate and emotional about the right thing, well, that's good. But the trouble with the Piscean Age, especially the latter two-thirds of it, is people were usually emotional and passionate about the wrong thing. They were deceived to a great extent. Now, there's a silver lining in this cloud, because does anyone know the lesson of the sign of Pisces? Anyone here studied astrology at all? What is the lesson of the sign of Pisces? The lesson of the sign of Pisces is this. It's the last sign in the zodiac. And it's a clearinghouse sign. It's a sign, if you got whatever you've got in Pisces in your astrology chart, that tells you what you're supposed to be testing out and finding out if it's worthy of keeping or not, and if it's not, then you need to drop it. And both Scorpio and Pisces are, a lot of astrologers feel these are terrible signs because they often portray death and sacrifice. But on the other hand, if we're letting something go, and letting something go is a form of death, because if you let something go or die, then it's no more, and it's like it's died to you. Like a divorce. If your marriage is not working and you let the relationship go, well, that can be a good thing in the right situation. You let it die. You find out it's not working, so you just let it go. And this is the age of Pisces, where the energy of Pisces in an astrology chart is it tells you what you need to let go. And when I read different people's charts and go through Pisces with them, you know, they usually really shaking their heads in agreement. Yeah, you know, I let that go. I was forced to let that go and it was good, or I need to let that go. It's amazing how much they nod their heads when you tell them how they need to let certain things go. You know, so you get so much agreement with you when you read that, you can almost see that there's something to that astrological belief. Now, as we look over the past 2,000 years, do we see a lot of failure? Do we see a lot of things that the world just has to let go of? One of the main things that we can see is letting go of war for pure ideological reasons. You know, like World War II, where we were fighting Hitler, pretty much we had to go in there and defeat him. Abraham Lincoln, in fighting for the freedom of the slaves and sustaining the Union, that was a good thing. But there are a lot of wars where there's one ideology against another, and neither one of them are superior. And this has been the case many times in our history. One ideology fighting another, and it's often one king fighting another, and it's for the pure sake of power. And ideology and emotion and feeling. People have a feeling for their king, that their king should have the most power, so they're going to help him fight this other king. And neither one king is. King of England may not be superior to the King of France. Doesn't really matter which one wins. They're both going to be, the winner is going to be a tyrant no matter how it comes out. And so we see in our history that many things that have worked in the past that seemed to have worked, we had to let go. One of the things that we let go that everybody agrees with is slavery. The beginning of the Aquarian Age, the foreshadowing of it happened around in the 1700s when this country was founded. And then the letting go of the idea of slavery was one of the steps moving into the Aquarian Age. In other words, we found out that slavery is something that we need to let go of. It just doesn't work anymore. Actually seemed to work for the Romans, because the Romans felt they wouldn't have been able to build up a great civilization without slaves. And what made slaves unnecessary was the beginning of the mechanical age, where we began to find we could create equipment that could do a lot of the routine work. And this made slaves more unnecessary. Now, if we hadn't have done that, we may still have slaves today. Because back in the Roman Empire, they felt it was absolutely essential. They had to have slaves. They felt that civilization could not be built up without slavery, that there was no other way to do it. And, you know, maybe they were right. Maybe they wouldn't have had as great of a civilization for a handful if they hadn't have exploited the many. Maybe there was something to that. But things changed when we started using our minds, which is the symbol. The mind is one of the symbols of the Aquarian Age. And we did away with the need for slaves. Matter of fact, as the Civil War started, the North that had no slaves was quite a bit more wealthy than the South that did have slaves. Now, a short time before that, everything was reversed. The country with the most slaves was usually the most wealthy. But because the North began to build up industry and use their minds and inventive machinery and new ways to manufacture, they began to get more wealthy without slaves than the South was with slaves. And people began to realize that by using their minds, slavery was unnecessary. But the unfortunate thing about us humans, when we feel that something is necessary, we will usually embrace it even if it is a great evil. And that's a sad thing about the state of humanity. If we were to go back, say we bombed ourselves back to the Stone Age, we may start having slaves all over again if we lost all of our technology. It's quite possible we could go back to slavery all over again. because, well, you know, we can't live comfortable without half a dozen slaves. You know, now even a person on welfare has a TV, microwave, car, gets along pretty decent compared to somebody in the old days. A person on welfare today lives about as good as a king did 1,000 years ago. Matter of fact, a king 1,000 years ago couldn't go 60 miles an hour down the freeway to visit somebody. If he wanted to visit somebody 100 miles away, it was a major undertaking, even for a king to get there. Now somebody on welfare can take a bus or get in his car and get there in a couple of hours, something a king couldn't do. Now we can get on the internet and talk to anybody in the world. 1,000 years ago, if a king wanted to talk, king of England wanted to talk to the king of France just a few hundred miles away, it was a major undertaking. Now we just get on the phone, on the internet, chat room, whatever. Lots of ways to communicate. And because of technology, and technology is often seen as a great evil, but what people don't realize is that technology of the Aquarian Age is bringing freedom, and it's one of the things that brought the freedom of the slaves. Nowadays, nobody even thinks about having a slave, except in really poor countries. And that proves the point. In the really poor countries where they don't have the technology, a handful of them still use slavery as a means for the rich to succeed. But in all the developed nations of the world, we do not have slavery because we have machines to do our work for us, and so we don't need them. And because we don't need them, we have allowed ourselves to quit embracing the idea of slavery. Okay, well, so we have this clash between the Aquarian Age and the Piscean Age. We've just passed over the cusp, I believe, into the Aquarian Age, which means that we have a couple hundred years to go before we get solidified. And until that time, we've got all these residual effects from the Piscean Age. We've got all these people still sacrificing to their churches, giving money just to build stone buildings that don't really accomplish very much. Give money to priests and what they do with it. Who knows what? A little bit of good is accomplished. You know, you see some of these guys like on TV who are donate and feed this starving kid in Central America. You know, that's good. A few things like that. But generally, the money that people give to their churches doesn't really accomplish much. In other words, what we've got is a residual effect of the sacrifice of the Piscean Age. People are still sacrificing, yet a lot of that sacrifice isn't intelligently sacrificed. It doesn't go to where it will really help anything. Now, the mistake people make is they say, well, everything about the Piscean Age is bad. Well, no, everything isn't bad. It's just the fact that we're moving into a new age, so there's certain things we have to let go. And remember, the Piscean Age, we have to learn what did not work and to let it go. We have to learn about what did not work about sacrifice, which is the key ingredient of the Piscean Age. So when we give our money, we should give it in such a way that we know what has been done with it. So we know that the money has been put to good use. And how many times have people given their money to what they thought was a good cause, and it winds up doing something that actually does more harm than good? This happens with our taxes. It happens with our donations to organizations, to churches, not only to churches, but also to other all kinds of benevolent organizations. A lot of these organizations, they all of them, whether they be good or evil, have a really nice sounding name. Such and such for humanity or whatever, you know, something that sounds good. But everything that sounds good isn't necessarily good. One of the things that I always ask, somebody asks me for donation, or I usually ask anyway, is, well, what percentage of it actually goes to help these kids? And half the time, the telephone solicitor says, well, I'm not really told. You know, if they're not really told, it means not too much goes to where they're saying it goes to. If it's a large amount goes to the good cause, they'll use that as a selling point, actually. You know, I've heard, I know some of them give, only have about less than 20% goes to overhead, which is really good. Others, you know, maybe only, when you look into it, maybe only 1 or 2% goes to where people think the money is going. We need to look to see where our money actually goes. And this is what a lot of people don't do. And throughout the Pisan Age, they would give their money to their priest, their prophet, their leader, and they wouldn't question, because they were told, give this money and it will get you into the kingdom of God. It will please Jesus. You're going to get a notch up higher in heaven. You're going to get more reward in heaven by giving this money. But did they get more reward, do you think? About the only reward they got out of it was the discipline they got from giving the money itself. Probably give them a little bit of discipline to be able to actually do that. But to get a reward from giving a gift, the gift actually has to produce some good. If the gift goes someplace that does more harm than good, then your reward will be what you get right from the feeling of giving the gift, and that'll be about all there is to it. So what we have, a lot of the conflict is we have one force pulling us back into the Pisan Age, another force pushing us into the Aquarian Age, and these two forces are struggling with each other. The epitome of the struggle was World War II. That was kind of the true Armageddon of our age. We had Hitler trying to take us back into the past where we had a strong, powerful dictator, king-like authority, telling everybody what to do and making all the rules. And the other side, we had a democracy where we had free elections of the nations. We had a step forward in freedom. So we had free nations against the kingly nations of the past. And during the Pisan Age, it was ruled by the kings. It's what you might call the age of the kingdoms. And the age where there was a great authority that ruled. Great authority ruled politically. Great authority ruled religiously. Great authority ruled in all the organizations. And we see this play out, this conflict. Now, we saw the political conflict in World War II, but it hasn't ended there. It's still there. There's still, like the Taliban, they want to take us back to where one guy makes all the rules. They're primitive rules. Women have to do this. Women cannot go out without a man. Women have to wear veils over their heads. Women can't teach. Women can't go to school. All these rules about women, and all kinds of rules also about what men can do. And so they got all these primitive, very authoritarian little dictators in a lot of the forces that we're dealing with right now. Not only with the Muslim nations, but we see it surfacing other places like North Korea, Cuba, and the forces want to slowly creep in and take away our freedoms internally also. It's working every possible angle to take us back into the Pisan Age, where we have a strong authority telling everybody what to do, and when the authority speaks, this thinking has been done, the authority just must be followed without thinking. That's where one force is trying to take us back there. And it is doing everything possible to take us back there. The other force is for progress. Progress in political progress, progress in freedom, progress in brotherhood, and progress in science, progress in manufacturing, progress in abundance for everybody, progress in every way. But this is the type of progress, the force of progress is moving in one direction where we have greater freedom, greater abundance, greater opportunity, and the other is pulling us the other direction. Now, both forces are found among all groups of individuals to some extent. Say in the Republican Democratic Party, both forces are at play in both parties, and both parties are condemning each other, and often they condemn each other, they're both guilty about the same amount, but both of the parties on the political spectrum have forces for good and evil in both of them, forces for going forward and backward. But we have to examine the areas in each one of the ways of thinking, whether it be politics, religion, or whatever, where are the people that are trying to pull us forward, and where are the people that are trying to pull us backward? Who are the ones that are trying to take away our freedoms and bring less freedom, give more power to central government, more power of the king to those that are over us? And where are the ones that are trying to give us more freedom? And so this is the dividing line. And we're right in the midway, close to the midway point right now. And that's why there's such a struggle in the world. And it's in a fairly unstable condition where it's a little bit like a powder keg where everything could go off at any moment. You know, let's say a nuclear bomb went off in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. You know, it would completely change everything. You know, and who knows what would develop from it. And so we're at a very dangerous point right now. And the good people, the disciples of the world, must learn to see what is good and what is evil, what takes us forward. Good is not only that which brings us more freedom, but it takes us forward in our spiritual evolution. But to go forward in our spiritual evolution, we have to have freedom within ourselves, freedom to decide, maximum freedom. Now, one of the problems with humanity is we're like pendulums. We swing one direction or the other. So we say, well, if you preach freedom too much or teach freedom too much, people that swallow it will get the idea, well, I must be completely free spirit and have no rules. Well, you need a certain amount of rules and regulations. If we need to keep the burglar from coming in our house and burglarizing our house, we need to keep the murderer from shooting people. You need a certain amount of structure. So you just can't go all one direction or the other. What we look for as we move into the Aquarian Age is maximum freedom. You want to look at the most practical freedom possible and then work toward that as a goal. None of us will ever have total freedom to do whatever any part of our nature wants to do. We'll always have freedom to do what our soul wants to do, because what our soul wants to do always can be done. But what our lower self wants to do, oftentimes it cannot be done because it doesn't understand the true nature of freedom. But what the soul wants to do can be done. What the higher parts of ourself plant in our minds to do can be done. There will be enough freedom to do that individually or collectively if we apply ourselves. And so we're living in a world where the disciples must learn to recognize what is good and what is evil. The interesting thing about the Aquarian Age is that even though there's always a problem, there's always forces that are trying to take us backwards, there's what we call the law of the dominating good. Now, it's in every comic book you learn that good is supposed to dominate over evil, and that's really a true principle, and it's called the principle of dominating good. That which is good is a little bit stronger than that which wants to pull us back into the old way of doing things. And why is good stronger? It's because the intelligence of humanity recognizes that which is good is better than that which is not good. Because we recognize, for instance, that humanity as a whole recognize that the free countries have a better system than the Taliban has. You know, average humanity intelligence can see this is better. Better system. We can see that no slavery today is better than the old South slavery. We can see that certain elements that of progress are better than the old way of doing things. That's why good dominates. Good dominates because good is supported by intelligence. And men, even though we have our illusions, if we strip away all of our illusions, we are intelligent beings. We're intelligent beings that is able to see the good once the illusions are stripped away, and once extreme selfishness is stripped away, then we will always choose that which is good, if the illusions are taken away. So we have to work on taking the illusions away, and we will progress into the Aquarian Age, and it will be an age where there will be an increase in brotherhood, an increase in group consciousness, an increase in awareness, an increase in sensitivity, an increase in love, and especially, as we said, the key word was service. And the idea, instead of sacrificing, will be to serve and then get appropriate recompense for the service rendered. It won't be a service where we just serve and sacrifice, but it will be intelligent sacrifice, intelligent service, with a recognition of the powers at play, that there is such a thing as karma, that we're going to get back that which we've given, and we will give intelligently, and we will serve intelligently. Now, the interesting thing about the coming age of Aquarius is that there are cycles in the zodiac. Each age lasts about 2160 years, if I remember right. And we haven't had an age of Aquarius till about 25,000 years ago. But there are bigger cycles. Each 25,000-year cycle is also influenced by one of the ages. Now, we're entering the first age of Aquarius in 25,000 years, but this coming age of Aquarius is also the beginning of a greater cycle of Aquarius. In other words, the whole next 25,000 years will be within a greater cycle of Aquarius. So what we have is the next 2,100 years is the beginning of a larger cycle, of a 25,000-year greater Aquarian cycle. So because we have Aquarius within Aquarius, this makes the Aquarius energy doubly strong what the last Aquarian age was. So we're entering a quintessential Aquarian age. And that's why the Aquarian age is, the Aquarian energies are so strong. And if we use them for the benefit of mankind, it has a possibility of creating change like we've never seen since the beginning of history, or prehistory even. Probably haven't seen it since the days, we haven't had an age like this since Atlantis.
Thanks for listening to the New Age Christian Synthesis podcast. If what you heard rang true and you'd like to find out more, please visit J.J. Dewey's website at freeread.com. That's freeread.com.